This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. A little bit later, we'll be talking about the Ebola vaccine, a new and promising one, and the state of technology research. But first, an update. Exactly 2 years ago tomorrow, August 9th, 2001, President Bush took to the airwaves to make a major policy announcement. He declared that as of 9 p.m. that evening, the very hour he was speaking, the U.S. government would limit funding of stem cell research.
As a result of private research, more than 60 genetically diverse stem cell lines already exist. They were created from embryos that have already been destroyed, and they have the ability to regenerate themselves indefinitely, creating ongoing opportunities for research. I have concluded that we should allow federal funds to be used for research on these existing stem cell lines, where the life and death decision has already been made.
Critics, including 40 Nobel Prize winners, deplored the decision, saying it would cripple their research, set back the development of new treatments and cures, and drive stem cell research overseas. Now, 2 years later, what has the impact been? Just how many stem cell lines are available? Are they being used? And what has happened to scientists attempting to do research with them? That's what we're going to be talking about for the first part of the hour. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Christopher Scott is the executive editor of the Acumen Journal of Sciences. That's a new journal that just came out a few months ago. Along with Tom Mader, he is author of The Consequences of Restrictions on Human Stem Cell Research. He joins us by phone from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ira. Delighted to be here.
When the president said there were 64, I think it was the number, how many stem cell lines are actually available?
Well, the total number is actually a moving target. Anywhere from 60 to 78 lines were originally listed on the, you know, on the NIH registry. The question that science seems to be asking right now is which lines are actually usable for the type of research that President Bush described in his address.
And how many of those lines are they saying are actually usable?
Again, it's a moving target, but nowhere near the amount that was originally on the registry. Reports vary anywhere from a handful, three or four, to perhaps a dozen or a little more.
Now, the president back then, let's go back and think of that announcement. The president was actually arguing from a moral decision on his part, was he not?
Yes, I believe he was.
Mm-hmm. Can you make the argument in your article that you're actually arguing from a moral decision to go the other way?
We do, and when Mr. Mader and I wrote the article, we took the position in the journal that there is moral suasion on the other side of this debate, and that's the question that needs to be asked about patients with disease that would benefit from therapeutic stem cell cloning.
In fact, some of the president's closest advisors and friends who knew of relatives or friends who were suffering from diseases were coming out in favor of additional stem cell research, were they not?
Yes, they were. And in fact, there are some fairly influential members of Congress, Orrin Hatch, among them, who have come out on exactly that position.
Mm-hmm. Are there critics who are accusing the president of having inflated the number of useful stem cell lines the way that he might have inflated the number of the ease of finding weapons of mass destruction?
I'm not sure. I couldn't really tell you with any certainty. I think that there was an honest attempt to catalog them, but once you really look at the details behind each line, you'll find that some lines are actually derivatives or daughter lines of the original line. Mm-hmm. Some lines don't work very well in the laboratory. They may have been isolated. And others simply haven't been characterized well enough. And what biologists need to do before they can go on with the experimentation to see if embryonic stem cells can provide therapeutic benefit, they have to characterize them carefully in the laboratory over many months. And that is actually one criticism of the ban now, is that the stem cell lines that are there, that are being characterized, aren't turning out to be as robust as everyone thought they would be.
You also write that there's a monopoly on getting use of these stem cell lines.
Well, it is, and it's part of the American technology transfer and intellectual property system. So that as a feature isn't necessarily bad, but my feeling about this, and we talk about this a little bit more in the piece, is that when you limit the discovery of new lines and improvements, you actually decrease the amount of competition that could go into creating lines for human use. So as a result, there has been a very small group of individuals within the United States that have intellectual property that can work on the lines. And another point that we argue in the article is that this intellectual property now is moving offshore to other countries.
Yeah, let's get into that about the effect abroad. There was a fear 2 years ago that the research would be driven overseas. Has that happened?
Yes, it has. Before I came to the Acumen Journal of Sciences, I was at the University of California, San Francisco, where two or more of the stem cell lines on the registry were created, and the individual behind that discovery, Roger Peterson, in fact pulled up stakes from San Francisco a year and a half ago and moved to Britain, where the environment for research of this type is not quite as strict.
Have any other people followed suits, or have any companies gone out of business or moved their companies?
No, but the premier stem cell companies in the United States are having a very rough time of it for many of the reasons that we've talked about. In the Bay Area, for example, Geron Corporation, 2.5-3 years ago, arguably the world leader in stem cell research, has been severely compromised by the legislation. Many of their top scientists in stem cell research have now moved to foreign shores to continue the research there. And the thing that we worry about when that happens is they take not only their know-how with them, but they take the intellectual property and the ideas and the reagents and all the rest of the stuff that kind of needs to go into a successful experiment with them.
Mm-hmm. We're updating 2 years later the president's decision on stem cell research. 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. You mentioned in your article that the New England Journal of Medicine announced last month that it would actively search out and publish good work on stem cells.
Yes, I don't think that we actually mentioned that in the article, but you are right. The New England Journal of Medicine last month devoted an entire issue to this controversy, both on the claim from some that adult stem cells, in other words, those stem cells that are derived from tissues other than the early embryo, are able to give rise to the same therapeutic benefits as the embryonic stem cell lines go. And the journal comes out very strongly with the statement that the court is still out on this particular point, and that there is no evidence in the literature yet that shows that adult stem cell lines are going to achieve the promise that they originally were thought. So the final analysis of this, I think, by my reading of the New England Journal, is that research needs to continue on both fronts. It needs to be unfettered. It needs to be regulated, for sure, and it is my personal opinion, of course, the opinion of the journal, that stem cell cloning for reproductive purposes is wrong and should have some legally enforceable component to it. But in terms of the research itself and in deriving uses for therapeutic purposes, they both need to go on in parallel.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. There, of course, critics were saying, the supporters of the president's action, supporters were saying that private industry would just step in. You know, there'd be enough money coming from private industry to step in, and there are enough good lines of stem cells. Even if there are fewer than the president mentioned, there are still enough lines of stem cells to go ahead. What's your reaction to that?
I believe that the NIH has always been the big funder of research in the United States, and without it we wouldn't have many of the technologies that we have now for human use. And to assert that the private sector is going to be able to step up here and actually provide the funding for stem cell research is simply not true. There are billions and billions of dollars that are pumped into basic research every year by the federal government, and the Bush administration has done something very smart from a strategy point of view, and that's that they've cut off research at the source. So my feeling is that industry support will not be able to bridge the gap, nor will support from other countries, simply because the technology isn't as mature in other countries.
Mm-hmm. It was felt a couple of years ago that if an offshore or foreign country were to develop a really useful product, then the feeling in this country might be reversed.
Yes, and in fact, that's a very good point. Who would deny, for example, a therapy for a Parkinson's patient here in the United States that had been developed offshore? I can't imagine anyone with any kind of a moral view would say, would deny that to a patient. So I think that the point here is that what the moratorium does now and the legislation that the 108th Congress is considering, the Brownback legislation among others, making this illegal in the near term actually hampers our longer term prospects. It basically puts things back by 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And do we know where that, have any idea where the Brownback legislation is going to wind up? It's still being debated?
It is, along with competing legislation by Dianne Feinstein, Orrin Hatch, Senator Kennedy, and others, which would allow therapeutic cloning while banning cloning for reproductive purposes.
Do you think that that stem cells and this cloning issue are getting mixed up politically and possibly on purpose?
Could be. This is a very heated debate. Semantics are incredibly important, and sometimes when you're using a semantically driven rhetoric, it tends to confuse the issues. For example, the word clone in many people's minds conjures up an identical copy of a person who may be sitting next to you, genetically similar in every respect, when biologists use it as basically a morally neutral sort of term. A clone could be simply a clone of DNA, one stretch of DNA identical to another, or a cell that's identical to another. That's the term that's mostly being used in scientific circles.
So if we go back, if we revisit this issue a couple of years from now, like we did today, 2 years ago, where do you think we'll be 2 years from now?
Well, that's a question that I wish I could answer. If I had a crystal ball, I could probably tell you. Perhaps there is some solace to be taken from those of us that feel that strongly that therapeutic cloning should continue, that winds change, administrations change, even opinions change. And it could be that in 2 years with a new administration or even a change in administration that this policy be reversed. One of the points we make in the piece, in the article in the journal, is that there is actually some history here that's already been written. In the early 70s, there was a proposed ban on recombinant DNA research, in other words, swapping genes from organism to organism. And a bunch of scientists, public policy people, and government folks came together in Asilomar, California, to come up with guidelines which since have been used extensively in research. And the hope is that a similar sort of conclave of experts would come together to do this for stem cells, too.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Christopher, for coming on and talking with us. And your journal, the Acumen Journal of Sciences, it's a brand new journal, and it's a very interesting read. I recommend it to our listeners. It's only been out since May, and I know you're executive editor there, and good luck with it.
Thank you very much, Ira.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a promising new vaccine to fight a deadly Ebola virus. The vaccine has worked very well in laboratory tests on monkeys, and Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, is going to be with us to talk about it and where it might go from here. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.